All rise, please. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Supreme Court of the State of Idaho is now in session pursuant to law.
Thank you all. Be seated, please. Thank you. And good morning once again. Welcome to the Idaho Supreme Court, sitting here at the University of Idaho College of Law for our third hearing of the day on February 12th, 2025. This case is entitled State versus James Mark Popp, number 51783. The appellant is James Popp, represented by Jason Pintler, with the respondent, the State of Idaho, represented by John McKinney. Counsel, are there any preliminary matters today?
Nothing from the defense, Your Honor.
Yes, there is, Chief Justice Bevin. The state will be conceding that the Coeur d'Alene Municipal Code does not apply in this case. We'll only be proceeding and pursuing the argument on the basis of the state statute, Idaho Code 187031.
Very well, so noted. Mr. Pintler, time is yours.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. James Popp pleaded guilty to possession of cocaine, preserving his right to challenge the denial of his motion to suppress. The facts of this case are pretty straightforward and not in dispute. Mr. Popp was in the passenger seat of his friend's vehicle, which was parked lawfully in the parking lot of the Iron Horse Bar and Grill in Coeur d'Alene. He was smoking a cigarette with the window rolled down. He was tipping the ash of the cigarette out of the window onto the ground. Coeur d'Alene police officers approached him and demanded his license, telling him that he was violating a Coeur d'Alene municipal code that prohibited littering on public property. Mr. Popp eventually turned over his license, at which point he was seized for Fourth Amendment purposes, and the subsequent investigation revealed that he was in possession of a small amount of cocaine. Mr. Popp filed a motion to suppress, arguing in relevant part that the ordinance did not apply to his conduct because he was on a private parking lot, not a public parking lot. The ordinance only applied to public parking facilities. The state responded to that argument. They also argued alternatively that Mr. Popp violated Idaho Code Section 187031 by depositing, quote, lighted material on the ground by ashing a cigarette. Defense counsel pointed out that that particular statute only applies if the depositing of the substance is not authorized by the owners of the property, and there was simply no evidence whatsoever that the owners of the Iron Horse Bar and Grill in Coeur d'Alene did not want their patrons smoking on their parking lot. Nevertheless, the district court denied Mr. Popp's motion to suppress, finding both that the officer had reason to believe that he was violating the municipal code and also believed that he was violating the statute. In light of the state's concession, I'll just stand for questions on if the court has any about the municipal code, but just going ahead then to the state statute. Again, the state statute itself requires, it only applies where a person is depositing a material in a place where it's not authorized by the owner. Whether that be public property or private property, it's not illegal, for example, for me to throw trash on my own property if I want to. It's my property. I've authorized it. My wife may not be happy with it, but it's still not a violation of that statute. So therefore, it's incumbent upon the state to prove that the owners of the parking lot did not approve of their patrons or anyone else depositing lighted material on this property. And again, I'm just conceding or assuming without conceding that burnt cigarette ash is, in fact, lighted material. That's a different question. But in this case, assuming that that applies and that smoking would apply, there was no evidence whatsoever that the owners of that particular property prohibited people from smoking there.
There was a difference between smoking and depositing ash. Wasn't there evidence that there was a receptacle on the property designated for the purpose of disposing of cigarette butts and other materials?
Sure. There was an area, as I understand, that is designated for people to be able to drink outside and smoke, I assume, as well. I assume that's why they have it. Under Idaho law, if you're you know, have a bar and it's outside. You have to have a designated area. It can't just be people drinking beer out in the parking lot. And I'm assuming they set that up so their patrons can go drink outside and smoke. But that's a,
and eat.
And eat. I would assume so as well, yes. But that's different than saying that they don't permit you to smoke in their parking lot. By Idaho law, they can't drink outside of the designated area.
You keep saying don't permit them to smoke. Isn't there a difference between permitting them to smoke and permitting them to dispose their refuse? Aren't those not necessarily the same thing?
Well, I agree those are not necessarily the same thing. But under the statute, it's the specific language that the state relied on was depositing lighted material.
Well, for example, if someone comes to my house and I say, and they ask me if they want to smoke, and I say, yeah, that's fine, that doesn't mean I've given them permission to put the ash on my wife's Persian carpet.
I would assume that that's true. That's correct. But again, it's the state's burden to show that the activity was not authorized. The state has to be able to point to facts, evidence, anything that would suggest that the owners of that property do not permit people to deposit lighted material or, in this case, tapping the ash of their cigarette onto their parking lot. And the state cannot present any evidence whatsoever that that was the case.
And speaking about the trash can, my understanding is that the testimony indicated there was one trash can and it was in the front of the establishment. Is that right?
I will defer to your memory of that, Your Honor. It didn't seem to be, frankly, pertinent because ultimately the state has to prove that what Mr. Pop was doing was violating the statute, and they didn't put on evidence that the owners of the bar did not permit smoking, depositing ash or whatever in the parking lot. There was no smoking signs.
Well, and just to be clear for the benefit of our audience today, part of the difficulty, I think, and you can disagree with me if you want to, is this citation was justified under the city ordinance that the state has conceded didn't apply. The state statute that we are talking about was offered as an after-the-fact justification, that the officer didn't cite him at the time for violating this state statute. Correct?
That is correct.
And so I think what Justice Mohler's question is getting to is the distinguishing feature in part between the city ordinance and the state statute, at least the one you're arguing on appeal, is the state statute requires evidence that the owner didn't allow somebody to do this. And Justice Mohler's question is going to the point, isn't the presence of a litter receptacle, a trash can in the front, evidence that this establishment, the owner, was indicating, you can smoke, but I've placed this here for you to deposit your ash, thus inferring, I don't authorize you to just come out and flick your ash on the ground.
I don't think that that's, first of all, I thank you. I appreciate it. That is a clarification of what the question is.
Yeah, I thought you understood me, so
no apologies needed. The answer is no. I don't believe whatsoever that if you say, here is a designated drinking, eating, and smoking area, that you are also necessarily saying you can't smoke by your car that's parked in the lot. I don't believe that is an accurate or an appropriate way to figure out whether or not what the intent of the bar owners.
Well, let's take that then for an example. Let's say the guy had come out of the bar with a hamburger and a wrapper, and he threw the wrapper into the parking lot and said, well, I don't think that trash can was an indication I couldn't litter here.
Well, we look at, so the question is then probable cause, and the question is we're looking at the officer, can use their training and experience. They can use not just their training experience as officers, but just as living people, right? That's a different scenario in which you're talking about, because I think objectively speaking, we would look and see if someone takes a wrapper of a hamburger and throws it on the ground, that they are in fact littering, that they are in fact depositing refuse in an area that is not authorized by the owner of said property. That's different than smoking cigarette, or excuse me, depositing cigarette ash. There's nobody has to go up and clean up the cigarette ash that somebody has tapped out onto the ground. It will just disappear. It's a miracle. What month it's here and then it's gone. The wrapper, of course, stays there for however long it's going to stay there until somebody picks it up and puts it into the trash. And I think that's the big difference.
But my struggle with that argument is, I'm going to date myself here, as someone who used to bus tables back in the day when you could smoke inside restaurants, absolutely you have ash to clean up when people just flick it on a table. And so I struggle with your argument because it seems to indicate it's litter depending on where it's deposited. And I'm not sure that that's supported by the law.
Well, again, we're talking about lighted material, so we're not talking about litter. I know that was really the Cortland code.
But I think the state is arguing lighted material, litter, or debris. I mean, they're all three terms are in the statute, right? I didn't read their briefing to limit themselves to this is only lighted material. I think, in fact, they cited some dictionary definitions to establish it was debris.
I believe that's true when they're talking about, I'll defer to Mr. McKinney, obviously, in his argument. My understanding was whether it's debris, lighted material, that is all reference to, or excuse me, lighted material is applying to the state statute. Whether it's debris, that's part of the definition of litter for the code section. But in any event, the point is they still have to prove, there has to be probable cause that the owners of the property didn't allow it. It's not something that it's just, you assume they don't allow it.
And that's why I asked my question about, wasn't there a trash can in the front? But not in the parking lot.
And I appreciate that question, Your Honor. I apologize. I don't recall the specifics of that. I will defer to your memory of that and assume that that is accurate.
And to the extent there was a trash can in the front, as I understand it, of the Iron Horse fronts onto a public sidewalk. Is that accurate?
I have never been to the beautiful city of Coeur d'Alene. I really don't know.
You're missing out.
That's a shame.
I have nothing negative to say about Coeur d'Alene. I just personally have never been there. So I don't know the answer to that as well. But for the Fourth Amendment analysis, the question is, at the moment the officer sees Mr. Pop, did he have probable cause to believe, and because the state argued he had probable cause to believe that he was violating this statute, the only evidence they had was that he was, quote, depositing lighted material, but that's not enough. There also had to be probable cause to believe that the owners of the property where he was depositing this material did not permit that. And so you mentioned, Your Honor, having to clean up ashes, you know, working in a restaurant back when people used to be able to smoke in a restaurant. I don't know this, Your Honor, but I'm guessing that the owners didn't make you go vacuum the parking lot. And that, I think, is the difference of what we're talking about here. That's not a from a probable cause perspective, there's no reason to believe that the owners of a bar, many of whom's patrons, of course, smoke cigarettes, are going to say, yeah, but as soon as you leave, you can't smoke while in our parking lot. Now, that may be what they believe, but there's no evidence of that.
Well, isn't the bigger problem on the issue of probable cause, since you bring that up, is the fact that this appears to be, especially given the concession just made by the state, a purely after-the-fact justification. The officer never referenced this state court, state statute. The court certainly didn't base its decision on that. So we're being asked to conclude that there was probable cause based on the officer holding someone based on a statute he never mentioned, and there's no evidence he was even aware of the statute.
Yes, thank you. That's 100% accurate. And that, of course, is the problem, and that's the reason why the state didn't meet its burden. The state had to show at the time that essentially the seizure at that point, was it justified at that point at its inception? Now, taking aside that Officer Ziegler only testified that he believed about this municipal code and never mentioned the state statute, in fact, specifically said, I never had any idea whether or not there was permission from the owners of the bar and grill. Actually, I believe what he said was he was asked if someone from the bar and grill had asked him, you know, to stop people from smoking. He said no. There's no evidence of that.
In this instance, do we look at the subjective intent based on a statute there's no evidence he was aware of, or do we look at it objectively and assume that a reasonable officer would have been aware of the statute?
It's not the question of whether or not the officer would have been aware of the statute. When we're talking about probable cause, we look to an objective, objectively looking at the facts known to the officer at the time and then make a determination as to whether or not there's probable cause, or I guess in some circumstances, reasonable suspicion that would justify the officer's actions further. And so,
So certainly that's how we look at the facts, right?
Right.
But when we look at the knowledge of the law, do we look at that objectively or subjectively?
Well, typically speaking, Your Honor, I'll put it this way. I've only ever seen this where there was actually an arrest based upon the probable cause that was there. And in those circumstances, we look generally to, it's an objective standard, right? So we've seen cases where an officer subjectively believes, you know, I didn't have probable cause to arrest him, and then the court later looks and says, objectively, yes, you did. Or objectively, the officer says, I believe I had probable cause to arrest for crime A, and they didn't, but it turns out on appeal, or excuse me, that the reviewing court would say, yeah, but you had objective evidence or objective information to arrest for crime B. In those circumstances, the question is, was the arrest itself justified by probable cause? And the answer, of course, in these scenarios is yes. Even though the officer didn't know it, we can objectively look and say there was probable cause. The problem is we're not dealing with an arrest. We're dealing with probable cause to cite. And so,
but isn't it the same thing, though? I mean, don't you need probable cause to cite just as you would probable cause for an arrest based on charging with a crime?
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely.
And at the time of the seizure, which was, I think everybody agreed, that was taking the license, the officer wasn't investigating anymore. He was getting ready to cite. And is that why it's probable cause and not just reasonable suspicion?
Well, the question of whether it was probable cause is because that's how it was presented, and that's how the state argued it. They argued that he was committing this violation in the officer's presence. So therefore, because of that, it's weird, I know we say probable cause, but when the officer actually sees it, that's pretty good evidence that you're violating a code section or what have you. Unless, of course, in this case, the officer's wrong, and the code section doesn't apply. But what I was getting at is typically when we speak and we're talking about, we're looking at cases where we're determining objectively whether or not the officer had probable cause to do something when perhaps the officer either subjectively didn't believe so or what have you, we're talking about an arrest. But this is a new area for me. I actually thought about this about an hour before I got here. Like, I don't know how I'm going to answer this. So thank you for asking, Justice Mueller. But there is a difference between probable cause to arrest and probable cause to cite. Because when you arrest, you take the person in, you book them, you know they're scheduled to go to their arraignment hearing at the next court date. You have all of these things, this process that occurs. When you cite, the officer's sole ability to seize that individual ends at the time that they hand the ticket over to the individual. And so if you're not actually writing a ticket, or even in the process, or even thinking about writing a ticket for a violation of a statute that this particular officer apparently didn't know existed, and I'll be honest, I didn't either. But if you have that circumstance and he's not actually doing that, even if you say he had probable cause, was he actually acting in conformity with what that probable cause allowed him to do? And I don't know the answer to that. I wish I did.
Sorry, isn't the question the legality of the detention?
Yes.
And so long as, I mean, the state, I want to be clear again for our audience, the state isn't doing anything wrong by offering another justification.
Correct.
After the fact. And so it strikes me if the state, even if the officer got the wrong crime, but he knew a crime was occurring that could be cited, so long as he's lawfully citing the guy, isn't that the end of the inquiry?
I'm not sure that, I guess I want to make sure that I'm understanding your question correctly. So yes, of course, there was nothing wrong with the state when they argued in the district court that, hey, even if there's not, you can't cite him for this municipal code, you can cite him for the statute. Certainly nothing wrong with that. The question, though, is that was Mr. Popp's seizure justified by this idea that he had violated the statute? So even if we're talking about whether or not what the officer is doing right or wrong or what have you, the question is, was there objective evidence under the totality of the circumstance known to the officer at the time that he committed the seizure, at the time he took his license, to justify, in this case, charging or citing Mr. Popp for a violation of 187031. And one of the elements of that is there has to be probable cause, or excuse me, evidence to believe that what he was doing actually was not authorized by the bar owner.
And can you respond to, the state has cited United States v. Thornton for the premise that the officer doesn't have to have probable cause on every single element?
I think the state accurately cites Thornton. I think that's what Thornton says. Thornton gets it wrong. Thornton is relying upon the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Adams versus Williams. What the Thornton court says is probable cause does not require specific evidence of every element of the defense. That's not what the court said in Adams. What the court said in Adams is probable cause does not require the same type of specific evidence of each element of the offense as would be needed to support a conviction. What they were dealing with in that case was whether you can base probable cause on evidence that would not be admissible at trial. Hearsay, for example. So an officer can rely upon hearsay. An officer can rely upon someone to, a witness doesn't have to be confronted before the officer can rely upon the information they get in terms of determining when we later look as to whether or not there was probable cause.
Probable cause doesn't have to be based on evidence that would be admissible at trial.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And that's what the Adams court held. And I think the Thornton case was, 20 or 42 years ago, and it was a three-judge panel. I'm not even sure that was what they had said about Adams was necessary to the holding. But in any event, of course, what controls is the United States Supreme Court precedent and Adams. And so there is no case from the United States Supreme Court that would I'm sorry, this is my last minute, or I apologize to the court if I'm
You're going into your rebuttal time is all.
What's that?
You're eating into your rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. I apologize. I'll just do my pre-rebuttal then. Delaware versus Prowse, I think, kind of explains this. When the Supreme Court says, in that particular case, we have an officer who just routinely would pull people over. No suspicion or anything like that. He just wanted to make sure that they were licensed. I just wanted to make sure the vehicle was properly registered. And so, what are the elements of driving without privileges? Well, driving and then without privileges. Well, the officer knew that the individuals would be driving, but he didn't know that they didn't have privileges. What the Supreme Court held in Delaware versus Prowse is you can't just pull over someone on the off chance that they might not be licensed. You have to have your reasonable suspicion or probable cause prior to engaging in that seizure. And so I would argue that this case is really controlled by Delaware versus Prowse. In the best case scenario for the state, they proved there was direct evidence that Mr. Pop was depositing lighted material or debris or whatever the case may be onto the ground of a private onto private property. They didn't have the second piece of that, which is a necessary element, that being that it's not permitted, that his actions were not permitted by the owner.
Does it change anything? Certainly it looks worse, but I'm not sure if it changes anything legally that your client was instructed that you can't do that. And then for a minute or two left his hand with the smoking cigarette outside of his car and continued to flick ash in the parking lot. I mean, I think chutzpah comes to mind when I try to think how to describe that, but he was told by an officer, you can't do that, and he kept doing it.
I would point out that he was right and the officer was wrong, and that you can argue it's chutzpah or whatever. It doesn't change the legal analysis whatsoever. Had there been some argument that he was resisting or obstructing or anything like that, there would be a different analysis as to whether or not there's probable cause to meet those elements. But the fact that he did continue when the officer said, that's littering, and he said, no, it's not, as Mr. McKinney has now conceded accurately, he wasn't. But Mr. Pop was right. The officer was wrong in this particular case. No, I don't think it makes a difference legally. Chutzpah, sure. These particular officers were on a bar patrol. They were looking for basis to search people's car. I think we can all say that that's what they were doing. They were trying, it was zero tolerance, which is good, of course. Nobody wants to see people driving away intoxicated, and hopefully that's the main purpose of the officers, what they were doing. But they just wanted to mess with these guys. They had out-of-state plates. They were young kids, and these officers came, and they're smoking in the parking lot. And the officer told them, you can't do that when you can. So does it make a difference in the analysis? No, Your Honor. Does it sort of paint a picture of what this encounter was? Yes, it does. With that, I'm running out of time. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. McKinney.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. Counsel, I'd like to at least address some of the questions that have been raised in the preceding arguments.
Mr. McKinney, before you go down that path, if we change the scenario and we put the owner of the Iron Horse Bar in the passenger seat of that vehicle, does this case come out different?
I'm assuming the owner of the Iron... Well...
The Iron Horse owner is the one who...
the state provision that... I haven't sorted that out yet. He would give himself authority, authorization, so I assume then the owner would not be able to be cited for this.
But what about searched? What about detained? What does that do to the officer's viewpoint? And this goes to the point that the SAPD makes in the brief, that the ramifications of this decision go way beyond this case. And if the state doesn't have to demonstrate all elements of the crime.
Well, there are three gradations of evidence in criminal law that have to be met. And it's first criminal trial. There has to be evidence or proof beyond a reasonable doubt of guilt. Then the next step down, and you lose something at each one of these steps, is probable cause. And I don't have the well-known definition, but are the overall circumstances and facts known to the person enough that a man of reasonable whatever would conclude that a crime has been committed. And then the next step, and the lowest step, which is very low in the threshold of evidence or proof needed, is reasonable, articulable suspicion.
So this means that if he's the owner of the bar, that the police officer has properly seized him, allowed a drug dog search to be conducted, he gets pinched for possession of cocaine, and he's now charged with and convicted of possession for cocaine for dumping lighted material on his property, which was authorized by law.
If he told the officer who was confronting him about cigarette ash, I assume you're keeping with the same scenario.
Yeah, this is the same exact scenario.
If that's the same thing. If he tells the officer, I am the owner of this parking lot behind this restaurant or bar and grill, and I have given myself authority to flick these ashes, then we have trouble. I think at that point...
What if he says nothing? I've been watching TikTok videos, and I know not to say anything to police officers.
Well, at some point, it becomes pretty clear to most reasonable people when there might be reasonable suspicion that something illegal is going on. For instance, not to change your scenario, but if somebody's scribbling graffiti on a wall, or even writing or painting profanities on a parking lot of the Iron Horse parking lot. What if the dog litter ordinance is being violated ostensibly on the parking lot? Does the officer really lack reasonable suspicion if any of those things are going on? Let's say a motorhome is dumping its holding tank on a parking lot.
But Mr. McKinney, my struggle with those arguments is it's the parking lot of a bar. You go to the bar, some people smoke, they go outside, they smoke, there's rarely a trash, I don't know that I've ever seen a trash can, I don't smoke, but you know, you go outside and you just see people smoking out there.
It's the only polite place to smoke, right?
And so this isn't like I'm throwing a hamburger wrapper, this is something a lot of people do, and I don't know why it's reasonable to assume that the bar owner doesn't allow it. Why isn't it more reasonable to say, hey, are you cool with this going on out here?
Well, let me answer. I've been to the Iron Horse in Coeur d'Alene.
Good for you.
it wasn't wild back then, but perhaps is now. But there was at least one ashtray in the front part of the Iron Horse Bar, according to the testimony of Officer, I think it was Ziegler. And there is no testimony about any ashtrays or trash cans that I recall being in the back parking lot. So we're stuck with that fact. There's at least one ashtray. But I would note it's an ashtray. It's where the owner, by putting it there in the front cordon off area of the restaurant, is signaling he wants ashes, or she wants the ashes to be deposited there, nowhere else.
And so, can you help me? Does the Iron Horse, does that front out on a public sidewalk?
Close to it. I've forgotten if it's right on it, but we have a lot of things on 8th Street that actually leach out onto it. I think it comes close to the sidewalk, but not onto it, if I recall correctly. But it's according to the testimony, it's cordoned off in the summer, and I assume it's not available in the winter.
And what time did this arrest take place? What part of the year?
About 10 o'clock in late, I think, January. So it's cold. It was very cold. The video showed the officers are extremely cold and rubbing their hands together, making comments about how cold it is. And
so the question that occurred to me about the placement of the trash can, because we have this city ordinance that says you can't litter on a variety of city properties, essentially thoroughfares and parking facilities and all of this, is the placement of the trash can out front evidence that the owner of the Iron Horse didn't want people depositing their ash there, or evidence that the owner of the Iron Horse was trying to comply with the city ordinance that says you can't litter on city thoroughfares and all of these other properties?
He or she may have been doing both. It may have been saying, look, the ordinance doesn't want litter out here or cigarette ash, and so I'm going to make an accommodation for that, and here's an ashtray. Or she may have just decided one is not necessary in the back parking lot, because that's not where people normally congregate, socialize. They're just going into the places of business from there, parking their cars. And so maybe, and then where there's structures for an ashtray. In a parking lot, you're not just going to set an ashtray on the ground, typically, but in an area where there are structures to attach it onto, tables perhaps. That's more in line with, okay, I can put ashtrays here and show and act on my intent that cigarettes, ashes, everything that goes along with it should be deposited here and not on my property.
And so shouldn't the officer determine which or both is the case before he purports to cite someone?
Well, that's where the very low standard reasonable suspicion comes in. And so sometimes you can't know everything, and it goes, and I think the Thornton decision would say that, although it says it in regard to, you don't have to have probable cause of every element of the crime, and it doesn't have to be the same as if you're going to trial. And even more so then, you don't have to have as much evidence if it's just reasonable, articulable suspicion. It's less than probable cause.
And is that your argument, that only reasonable, articulable suspicion is required at the time that Mr. Pop was seized?
Well, they had probable cause. No, my argument is they had reasonable, articulable suspicion to stop and inquire, and then they see some fucking ash. Evidently, it's a zero tolerance day in Coeur d'Alene, and they're bar hopping and going through parking lots, and anything they see, they're going to cite. And they told them that.
At what moment did it switch from reasonable suspicion and elevated to probable cause?
Well, when they saw him keep flipping his ash, they had probable cause.
So you disagree that was meaningless, that his continuance suddenly satisfied all of the elements of the crime sufficient for probable cause?
I think that did satisfy probable cause, and they had, at that point, and I think detention is the important thing. They had the right to detain him until they wrote out a citation and delivered it to him.
Help me logically. How did continuing to flick his ash provide evidence of what was missing earlier, which was lack of authorization?
Well, that perhaps did not. And so there is actually a better point of facts in this case that would add to the state's argument, which is pretty much been limited to, well, if we have the fact of an ashtray out in front that signals the owner's intent to not have ashes distributed on the property, and so from that the officer could infer, or we can infer, that there was no authorization.
You know, I assume I'm, unlike a few of my colleagues, apparently less informed on the Coeur d'Alene bar scene and in general, and perhaps the Iron Horse culture in particular. But in my human experience, it seems to me that places outside of buildings where property owners don't want you to smoke, they usually put a sign that says no smoking allowed, rather than putting an ashtray encouraging smoking.
And I think this court has brought up that there are two different things, smoking and where you put your debris.
Right, and I suggest that, but this wasn't a buck. This was the ash. Yes. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I'm not sure outside on a windy, cold night that you get my point, is that it just doesn't seem to me that if there was really a question, if permission or authorization is an element of this, there would have been some effort by the state to put more evidence on, other than the fact that there was a trash can with an ashtray located in front of the building where the offense occurred in the back of the building.
Well, again, we have the hypotheticals of how much does an officer have to know about who owns the property when all these other bad things, dog littering on the property, graffiti being painted on, other types of waste being poured on the property, how much before an officer has reasonable suspicion to stop and detain him for a while.
I agree with you on reasonable suspicion. It's the probable cause that's causing me a problem.
Well, he's seeing the, assuming it's litter, and we've had a pretty good discussion on that, and I would, if called on to say, what is the main point of the litter? It's lighted material. In our brief, we have cited the Boise City Fire Department safety manual or whatever it is that says hot cigarette ash can and does cause large fires, big fires. And then there's, I think, five cases that say the same thing. So I assuming that it's litter for the purposes of this argument, the question is whether or not he was authorized. And should the officer have known that or looked into it, whether he was authorized? And that brings me to the point, I think, that...
But before you go there, let me ask a question. Isn't littering, and I want to step a little bit back from either the Coeur d'Alene ordinance or the state statute, isn't littering inherently a crime against public property? I mean, think about private property. If someone dumps something on someone else's private property, you've got trespass, you've got, you know, potentially an EPA violation. I mean, there's other laws that might come into play. But littering is inherently a public property crime, is it not?
It can be both. I think inherently, yes, but it also would apply to private. If you're the private owner, let's say this parking lot in behind the Iron Horse, and somebody's dumping garbage, that's littering on your property. You have just as much of an interest as the general
cause of action might be different, though. Cause of action might be something
yes,
more like
yes.
trespass. But my point is, because it is inherently a public property crime, doesn't the state need that lack of authorization from the owner under the state statute?
Well,
number one, in order for a conviction, but even in order to have probable cause.
Under Thornton, I would argue no, for reasonable suspicion. And Thornton would suggest not even for probable cause. If there's any element in the... in Idaho Code Section 187031, that can be ignored or dispensed with in looking at whether or not there's reasonable suspicion or probable cause for littering or placing debris where it shouldn't go. It's the authorization part, which would be clearly, very often, an after-the-fact determination. In this case, we don't even have to go there. I think there's more than what's been brought up to suggest to this officer that Mr. Pop knew that he was not authorized to put cigarette ash. And that is, in looking at the video, he is told several times by the officer that he's been littering. And he says, no, I didn't do anything. And the officer says, well, you just ashed out the window about three times. Pop said he didn't do anything wrong again. And the officer told him again what he did wrong. And then Mr. Pop says, my bad, I didn't know I couldn't ash out the window, and I'm sorry. Well, what's he apologizing for? If he had the authorization from the parking lot owner to put ash on the parking lot, he shouldn't be apologizing.
Boy, that's reading a lot into that
yeah.
comment. If a cop tells me I can't do something, I think, assuming I didn't try to prove what a great lawyer I was, I would likely say I'm sorry, regardless of whether I plead with the officer or not.
Well, the conversation went on, and the officer told him again what he did wrong. He said that I had already told you what you did wrong. And Pop then says, and I'm quoting, as best as I can recall in writing and scribbling this down, he says, "My bad. I didn't know I couldn't ash out the window, and I'm sorry."
But the officer's assertion is unsupported. There's no foundation for it. And that is a built-in assertion in the officer's statement. You can't do this. The built-in assertion is you're not allowed to. And so I read Pop's response as, you must know something I don't, or you're a cop and I'm not, and I just want you to go away. So, okay, sorry.
Yeah, let me build on that. If I get pulled over for speeding and the officer has me roll down the window and says, you were speeding, and I say, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I've confessed anything, have I?
Well, having been a prosecutor, I would probably argue that you were, at least conceding a little bit that you were speeding. But I guess, to my mind, a reasonable person would say, if you've been given authorization by the parking lot owner to place your cigarette ashes on the surface of the parking lot, and an officer comes to your window and says, you're littering, and then you...
But why does he have to say, I have permission to do this?
Well,
it's not his obligation.
He doesn't, but we're just wondering and looking into what reasonable suspicion, assuming...
Well, reasonable suspicion is, I'm the police officer. I see a pickup truck show up at my property or at a private property at 3 o'clock in the morning and deposit 7 33-gallon trash bags and a mattress and drive away at 35 miles an hour, peeling out from the curb. Now, that, to me, would be reasonable suspicion that that person didn't have authorization to just dump that load of trash on the person's private property. But this scenario is much, much different.
Well, I think you've hit on the fact that was mentioned several times throughout the underlying proceedings, that even by the judge, the word chippy came up. This is chippy. This is not like, and I think we probably all agree that seeing somebody come and throw a rock through a window, but they probably didn't have authorization to do that from the owner of the building or structure, right? And that seemed really blatantly obvious, and that's common sense. But can you now whittle down to this cheap chippy, but it's littering scenario, that there still would not have been authorization? And this officer had two facts before him, whether he said them or not. The court's aware of them, and this court's free to determine that. And he had the fact of the ashtray in the front, which is an indication this owner's interested in having ashes put in ashtrays, not cigarette butt trays, ashtrays. And this guy's, Mr. Bob's statements, his apologies, you would have thought he would say, when accosted for doing something that the owner has given him the authority to do, that he might have mentioned it then.
But the whole point is the statute doesn't require Mr. Pop to get authority to smoke out back in order for the officer to have probable cause to cite him. And that brings me to, when we're looking at reasonable suspicion or probable cause, my understanding of the record is at the time the drug dog alerted on the car, the officer was in the process of writing the citation. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. The drug dog's intervention and involvement in this case is totally irrelevant.
Right, but for purposes of determining reasonable suspicion or probable cause, it strikes me when he moves to writing the citation, he's done with his investigation, and he's moved on, and so that's a probable cause scenario. Wouldn't it be an entirely different situation if he said, you wait here, Pop, I'm going to go in and talk to the owner of the Iron Horse, and I'll be right back, and the drug dog alerted then?
That would have built his case up for the prosecution at trial all the more. But we're talking, again, at the lowest level of knowledge, of information that is required by law, and that's reasonable, articulable suspicion.
But my point is, when he terminates his investigative purpose for the detention and he moves to citing him, aren't we in probable cause then?
Yes. He's citing him, and he was being detained for the issuance of that citation.
And so we're not talking about whether he needed, for the purposes of determining whether the continued detention was lawful at the time the drug dog alerted, don't we need to determine whether there was probable cause at that moment, because the reason for the detention is the writing out and issuance of the citation, as opposed to an investigation of whether a crime had occurred?
Well, he's got all the information that he would have at that point when he starts talking to him at the window. He's looking at his ash, tells him it's littering. I think there's other discussion, and then he apologizes twice.
Okay, well, let me stop you there for a second, take maybe a little different angle on this, move away from the authorization. You said that he had all the evidence that he needed. And I want to challenge that for just a second. Is there any evidence that the officers collected the ash that they claim was falling in the parking lot?
No.
Okay, so my understanding, if you're going to charge somebody with something, at least first-year criminal law, you have to have a corpus delicti. Wouldn't the ash have been the corpus delicti here?
I would have to research all the latest advances in corpus delicti law, but I don't think it pertains to this situation.
Well, let me give you another example. If he had been seen dropping a Doritos bag, an empty Doritos bag, right, outside the car, you're telling me the cops wouldn't have picked up the Doritos bag, put it in a plastic evidence locker, and sealed it?
Sure.
Yeah, but they didn't do that with the ash here.
No.
So how could you say that they had probable cause, or this was anything other than pretextual, charging him with something that they actually didn't bother to collect any evidence of?
Well, a couple points there. I think we've discussed, and I thought we were done with the, is this litter? And so it seems like you're making the argument that if you can see it, it's litter. If you can't, it's not.
Well, it's a little more than that. I'm kind of arguing pretext. It doesn't seem to me that for probable cause purposes, if you hadn't bothered to collect the corpus delicti, that makes me really wonder if they were serious in asserting probable cause.
Well, that's when you get to the fact that these are cigarette ashes, and so it's, I don't know if it's windy or what, but collecting them would have been perhaps problematic. But he had pretext. You could perhaps make the argument that this whole community action team that goes out and zero enforcement, that that's what they're doing, but it doesn't matter.
Okay, well, let's assume that they hadn't found the drugs, and they decided, we're going to prosecute this guy for littering under the state statute that was never referenced, and they went ahead and brought that case to trial. Could they have won that trial? They took no pictures of the ash. They collected no ash. Did they have any corpus delicti in which to prove their case?
Well, part of the question is what is required for the officer to know or say or cite, and I think the Julian case covers that. I think the Justice Song covered that with one of her comments, that we don't really care what the officer says, does, or cites. That if there was, in fact, in the view of the court, this court, that there was reasonable articulable suspicion, or if there was probable cause, or for arrest, then, and the facts show that, then it's valid. So we don't care what the officer said or did for purposes of detention under the Constitution. Now I've forgotten what you're.
That's okay. Can you get to can you find probable cause in the absence of the corpus delicti?
I think you can. I think I may be wrong on this. I don't watch too many true crime shows. I think there's been a enough of them where there's been no body corpus, and so I think just my $2 an hour gut reaction to that is yes, I think you can prosecute cases without a corpus.
I mean, if somebody allegedly threw a Doritos bag in my parking lot and I can't produce the Doritos bag?
Well, then there'd be some serious cross-examination of the officer.
I imagine.
That's why they didn't do that, but here it would be pretty reasonable to assume they couldn't just collect the ash. And I know the argument in the brief was that, well, if it piles up, then it's something that you could proceed against. But if it just dissipates and you can't see it, then there's no litter. And that's not the definition of litter. Litter is defined most significantly in the state statute as lighted material. And so we know that lighted material can cause fires.
I'd be more likely to agree with you if they were in a National Forest Service property and they were flicking flaming ash into a forest and you had a video of that. I think that would probably get you there. But
I agree.
But this is a very different case.
It is. It's very, very well, like has been said by the prosecutor below and I think the judge below in the district court. This was chippy. This was one where most people would not think that flicking cigarette ash you know, under these circumstances would constitute litter, but it does, under the state statute, constitute litter because it's lighted material that's being dropped on somebody else's property. And so the only question then is, if and assuming that for reasonable suspicion, this officer had to have some inkling that the property owner did not authorize it, we have two things. We have the ashtray, it could have been more than one, in the front, and we also have, and I probably differ with what I'm hearing, but when he apologizes twice, instead of pulling out his trump card, hey, I talked to the owner, I am entitled to do this, I got permission from him to do this, he could have said that, and he didn't. And the most obvious reason why he might not have said that is because he didn't have permission. And so the officer's entitled to know that. And this court, whether the officer said it or acted on that at all, this court's entitled to take that additional fact, along with the ashtray, in consideration, even assuming that the reasonable suspicion standard would require evidence, any degree, of the lack of authorization. If there are any questions, I would ask this court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, how much time for the appellant?
6 minutes.
Sir?
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of points I'd like to make. First of all, the state actually didn't argue that Officer Ziegler had reasonable articulable suspicion to conduct a further investigation in the district court. They argued Mr. Popp was violating the ordinance and the statute in the officer's presence, therefore he had probable cause. The reasonable articulable suspicion standard doesn't allow you to then cite somebody for a violation of a law. It allows you to temporarily detain that individual in order to further an investigation. So in the counterfactual, in this scenario, maybe it was Officer Ziegler thinking, you know what, I seem to recall the owners of the bar saying something about they didn't want people smoking on their property. Let's go, hey, I'm going to detain you for a second, then we're going to go inside, we're going to ask whether somebody in there, whether or not there's whether or not there's permission to do this, or whether or not it's not authorized. That would be a proper a way to further an investigation if the officers were only operating under this idea of reasonable articulable suspicion. So in addition to that, not having been argued in the district court and not therefore being preserved for appeal, it's counter to the facts that actually exist in this case. I do agree, Your Honor, if there was a bunch of no smoking signs out there or smoking in designated areas only signs or things like that, that is at the very least probable cause for the officer to believe, taking the known facts that the officer has and looking at these signs and saying, you know what, that's telling me that this is not authorized behavior. One final point I'd like to say, counsel made an argument that Mr. Popp had to show that he was authorized to do that, but that is not accurate. The statute only criminalizes this behavior where it's not authorized. That is the plain language of the statute. I won't read the whole thing, but it says, it shall constitute infraction for any person to deposit upon any public or private property lighted material on any place not authorized by the owner of such property. So in other words, it's only a crime if it's not authorized. It's just like entering Winco. It's only a crime to enter Winco if you have the intent to steal something at the point when you're entering. That's burglary. But for the rest of us who are just going in to buy some groceries, it's not a crime. And of course, it's, you know, again, getting back to the driving scenario. It's only a crime to drive if you are not authorized, if you're not licensed to do so. It's not something that, well, maybe that's a bad example. I'll walk that one back. But in any event, the point is that it wasn't for Mr. Popp to prove to Officer Ziegler that he was authorized to smoke out there. It was for the state to prove that Officer Ziegler had probable cause to cite Mr. Popp for violating the statute. And the only way they can do that is if there's probable cause at the point where at the point where they took his license and seized him, that he was not authorized to do that. It's not for him to prove that he was authorized, it's for the state to prove he wasn't authorized. And because of that, the state did not show that the officers had probable cause to seize Mr. Popp, Therefore, he asks this court to vacate his conviction and reverse the order denying his motion to suppress.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, thank you both. This matter is under advisement. We'll render a decision accordingly. We're now be in recess until February 14th, but we look forward to the opportunity to meet the students here at around 1:00, 1:30, 1:00. All right. So enjoy your chance to query these great lawyers about what you just missed. We'll be in recess. Thank you.